Welcome to Jump in Tucson. I'm your host, Ed Ackerley. And on our Monday show, Jump in Tucson's Monday theme is Wonder at the University of Arizona. There's so many fantastic things going on in terms of research and discovery and wonder at the University of Arizona. We use Mondays as a day to focus on that. Coming up on tomorrow's show, Tuesday with Ted Maxwell, he will have Supervisor Sylvia Lee and Congressman Juan Ciscomani. On Wednesday, Grant Kruger will host Heather Lappin, a candidate for Pima County Sheriff. Tom Moulton will host on Thursday with one of Tucson's gems of the desert, the Tucson Botanical Gardens. And then I return at the end of the week with success stories. Our guests will be Mike Katsonis from Papule's Restaurant and RJ Saavedra from Reach Out Women's Center. So we have a power-packed week of shows on Jump in Tucson. And so as we discuss wonder at the University of Arizona, with us this morning is Jonathan Keats. Jonathan is an American conceptual artist and is also an experimental philosopher. Welcome to the show, Jonathan.
Thank you.
So if you could tell us a little bit about your journey, how you became a conceptual artist and how you your experimental philosophy and the creative things that you do with your career and engaging students and how you became affiliated with the University of Arizona.
Well, I suppose that one doesn't really start out in life thinking I'm going to become an experimental philosopher or, for that matter, a conceptual artist. Kind of falls upon you. And I would say that that's the case for me. I've, since childhood, as most children are, just been intensely curious about everything, but had a particular, maybe an eccentric way in which I've gone about exploring the world. When I was 6 years old, I was trying to figure out what my father did for a living. He was a stockbroker, buying and selling. It was such an abstraction. So I started selling rocks on the street corner that were completely and they're identical to the ones that were on the ground. And so selling them for a penny interest, trying to figure out, you know, where does value come from? And of course, back then I was not going around with highfalutin terminology about this being experimental philosophy. But in a sense, I think that's what I've been doing ever since. I studied philosophy in school and felt that it was too important for philosophers, at least in the academic world, in the constrained ways that philosophers go about doing their work and not really sharing it sufficiently with others. So I tried to take the thought experiment, basically positing a counterfactual, establishing an alternative reality that we enter into together as a way in which to be able to explore our own world and to try to make sense of the decisions we make, to consider a possibility space much larger than actuality, and to figure out what kind of future we collectively want to strive to achieve. And so that led me here and there and ended up at the University of Arizona back in the year 2000 at the Poetry Center. I was a summer resident there. And so I guess, as that suggests, my practice is quite eclectic. I'll do just about anything and don't really know how to do anything well, which I see as being an asset, because it means that I'm therefore all the more willing to find the medium that makes the most sense. And so then I came back around at the invitation of the Desert Laboratory on Tumamoc Hill, where I became a research associate and where I started to explore, again with the Poetry Center, weather proverbs, but thinking about weather proverbs in terms of climate change and prompting people through slates that we installed on the hill to conceptualize possible futures in terms of taking weather proverbs and imagining what they might become.
That's fantastic. And so you've been with the U of A now for 24 years, affiliated with the U of A. And does that includes research, but teaching, I assume, is part of your mission and sharing your ideas with students?
I have run quite a few workshops, and I would say that your 24-year estimate is highly generous, because after my summer residency, which was in the old Poetry Center, Dobies. It was just glorious. I was living in, my housing was basically a library filled with poetry. But after that, I went on, did other things elsewhere, and then came back around maybe about 4 years ago,
4 or 5 years
ago is when I came back. And so, yes, I've been working with students and faculty in many different ways. As a research associate, kind of means that I am, I can be a dilettante. I can, I can work across, across disciplines, and I can, I guess, make mischief in myriad ways. And that's what I, do there when I can get away with it.
Right. And you're affiliated with the College of Fine Arts. So you're kind of a bridge between the arts and the sciences, but kind of interpreting both through your research, but also through your active participation in producing things that are meaningful for the discussion that the people would have about what we see in the world and how we perceive those things.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that what I've been working with faculty and administration on is conceptualizing how to make arts research a central proposition or an area that the university can excel in. That is to say, how do we go beyond the interdisciplinary and the transdisciplinary to what I refer to as a metadisciplinary? How do we get outside of these silos entirely and consider the problem space that we are from very different vantages considering? And how do we, through practice, through doing things in the world, how do we make discoveries that can activate us individually and can also lead to new ideas emerging that can be beneficial collectively?
And so that that whole focus then on experimental philosophy then is challenging the norms and looking at things from a different perspective and changing the paradigm, if you will, to try and look at things and that as we see the world, we see them from a scientific viewpoint, but we also need to see them from an artistic lens as well.
I think so, but I think that the artistic lens is often construed as being a pretty picture or
right.
entertainment, or even is construed in terms of certain genres and media that are well known, painting, sculpture, and therefore very often what happens is that artists within a research institution, especially within the sciences, are kind of construed as being illustrators. Or conversely, artists go in and are basically asking the scientists, begging them really, because all the resources are on the side of the sciences and engineering, but begging them for various kinds of assistance in terms of being able to create some sort of new media art. And what we're really trying to do, and what I've been working on for my entire career, is how to transcend that distinction, that divide, and how to think about what research can be more holistically. How do we, instead of trying to think about what scientific research is per se, and trying to do that in a way that is constrained and does not allow for other ways of knowing, how do we kind of take the question and how do we pursue it as effectively as possible?
Well, we've got a great project that you're working on that we'll come back after the break and talk about your Millennium Camera project. You're listening to Jonathan Keats, an American conceptual artist from the University of Arizona, and this is Jump in Tucson on KVOI 1030 AM, The Voice. Dr. Ed Ackerley, today we're have the Wonder segment on Monday. Our guest is Jonathan Keats, an experimental philosopher and American conceptual artist at the University of Arizona. And he has a really unique project that he's working on called the Millennium Camera, and looking at how people will see the future 1,000 years from now. Jonathan, can you share with us the Tumamoc Hill project and what you're working on with the Millennium Camera and what your vision for that is?
Yes. So I have recently installed a camera on Tumamoc Hill that is a little bit unusual, even by the standards of Tumamoc Hill, which is where repeat photography originated. So it is a really important place, historically speaking, in terms of thinking about photography. What I've been doing is thinking about how we might use photography as a way in which to counterbalance our hubris. We have only very recently in evolutionary time gotten to the stage where we can affect our planet over hundreds or thousands of years through our actions. And at least in my opinion, we really have not evolved psychologically, mentally, to be able to contend with that responsibility. And so what I've been thinking about and working on are ways in which to activate a responsiveness to the environment and a responsibility for the environment through time in ways that can surpass our own lifespan. And so I decided to start making cameras that have an exposure time of 1,000 years. And the idea is that the camera is very slowly fading an image of whatever transpires, wherever the camera is set over that 1,000-year span. And it becomes a way in which those in the far future are able to see the decisions that we make or the consequences of those decisions. And that ideally prompts us in the moment to, through a sort of mental time travel, being able to imagine what they might see, to look at our world from their perspective. But because we are in the here and now, we can change the picture. We can make it what we would want people in the far future to see. So it becomes a sort of a feedback loop, perhaps a feedback mechanism that allows for a kind of time travel that ideally can have an impact on our decisions and on our actions. And this is a project that I've been working on around the world. The first of these cameras was installed actually up the road at Arizona State University. It's installed at the ASU Art Museum. That camera has been active since 2015. So 3015 is when listeners should expect to hear what we managed to get in the way of an image. And I've also done the same on Lake Tahoe in Nevada and the Holyoke Range in Massachusetts, and we'll be next year going to various locations ranging from the Austrian Alps to China. So it's really a global or a planetary project, and Tucson is the latest node within this network, and really, because of the history of Mohawk Hill, an extraordinary place to be able to work.
Well, this is a very exciting thing. So we're talking with Jonathan Keats, a research associate at the University of Arizona College of Fine Arts, and his project on the Millennium Camera. You know, the University of Arizona has just returned the sample from the asteroid Bennu and the OSIRIS-REx project, and have kicked it back out to outer space to go find something else. And, you know, when they talk about, you know, 4.1 billion years ago and the length of time, it's mind-boggling to think about the time that they're talking about. Equally so, to think about 1,000 years from today and to have someone 1,000 years from now take a look at your camera and see what has transpired over that 1,000 years is absolutely mind-boggling. And so what got you into the thought of looking into the future, especially, and why is 1,000 years the number that you picked to say that this is a 1,000-year project?
Well, actually, I began with 100 years, so okay. Much more modest, I suppose you could say, working within cities, initially in Berlin. And the idea was to engage people in the process of gentrification, as I was witnessing in Berlin, and as is the case, really, in cities throughout the world. I wanted to use the camera as a way in which people could see what they were doing, because incrementally, it's really hard to observe the effect of your actions. So by having this kind of leap into the future and then having a retrospective view, the idea was that this could get people to see change in the moment. And so from 100 years, quite naturally, I needed to expand upon my ambition. That meant going from 100 to 1,000, where it wasn't entirely arbitrary. I mean, beyond the fact that Base 10 system leaves you there, it also was really about trying to go from the context of urban planning to this much broader set of questions that come up when we think about environmental conditions. And I think that when we go to 1,000 years, where we're looking at that number of generations, It expands the view in a way that we're able to look at everything from the housing, for instance, that is currently being built in Tucson, to the more long-term features, the growth of the saguaro, the even geology itself. So it becomes a way in which to be able to activate that kind of thinking that is in the moment, in every moment from now until 1,000 years from now. So people are constantly coming up against the camera. And in doing so, they are constantly observing themselves and in dialogue with others through time.
One of the taglines that the University of Arizona team uses is wonder. It's what makes us. And certainly this project, just thinking about what 10 centuries from now, what when some human being opens up the camera in 1,000 years and takes a look at what has transpired over that 1,000-year period and deciphers just what you've talked about, the maybe the geological and the certainly the housing and how humans were walking around in front of that camera in the 2020s, and then what it will be like in the 3000s, what is it going to look like? And so this isn't a digital camera, but this is a camera that's going to be able to capture that that light-sensitive surface will capture this and give an image for someone to look at 1,000 years from now. This is fascinating.
Have to make it as simple as possible because people will forget to change the batteries. And also, you know, even if it were to be a film camera, would anyone know how to develop the black and white or especially the color film of today? So it's literally the same way that you can watch a magazine on your coffee table fade in the sunlight. Same process, but in this case, it's a pinhole camera. So we're focusing very little light through a pinhole, projecting it onto a substrate that is using a Renaissance oil painting technique, using red matter, a pigment that is light fugitive, that's light sensitive in the sense that it's fugitive, but should be sufficiently durable to be able to take that image very gradually. And the pinhole is pierced through 24 karat gold in order to be able to ensure that it will be able to last that length of time.
That's a fascinating idea and a fascinating research project and a fascinating way to look at wonder from a unique experience. If someone wanted to read more about the Millennium Camera or about Jonathan Keats and what you're up to and the things that you're doing and your experimental philosophy and your artwork, where would they go to find more about you?
Well, there is a website. Tumak Hill website has a webpage about the Millennium Camera Project. And there recently is a monograph published about my work called Thought Experiments, which people can find at the library or they can order it from Hermer, the publisher of that book.
Great. And there's also an article on this at news.arizona.edu featured in the UA News portal with information on the project at Tumak Hill. You've also you're thinking about if you get the funding that you might do another one at the Santa Rita Experimental Range.
Very much hoping to do that. Yes, I really want to look at Tucson in its entirety, potentially to have another camera facing the other direction onto Mumak Hill, but also to look at other locations. And I'm very open to listeners who have ideas, both in Tucson and beyond.
And if a listener wanted to help with the project and make a grant or help with the funding, you would certainly be open to that, correct?
Absolutely. I am ready to start building.
I love it. What a great project, the Millennium Camera on Tumak Hill. And Jonathan Keats is our guest today. He's a research associate at the University of Arizona College of Fine Arts, and he's an experimental philosopher and American conceptual artist with this 1,000-year look into the future of what Tucson looks like now, but what human beings will open up and see 1,000 years from now. Mind-boggling and certainly full of wonder. So, Jonathan, thank you for joining us today. We really appreciate the information on the project, and good luck, and hopefully you'll get some more around the world, and 1,000 years from now, you'll be famous because they'll open up and see what Jonathan Keats has to show us.
Thank you. Really appreciate it.
All right. You're listening to Jump in Tucson. This is the Friday edition, the Wonder edition about the University of Arizona. This is on, we'll be coming back after the break to talk to a couple of students from the University of Arizona. You're listening to Jump in Tucson on KVOI 1030, The Voice, Tucson's only live local news and talk. Welcome back to Jump in Tucson. This is, I guess I'll say Dr. Ed Ackerley, this segment. We're going to be talking with a couple of students from the University of Arizona. This is the Monday edition, and we talk about wonder, which is obviously the theme of the University of Arizona. And we talk about the good things, the good research, the good works that are going on at the University of Arizona, the good stories of success and meaning to our planet and to our people. So we've got a power-packed couple of Mondays coming up. Today we're going to talk with a couple of students. They both happen to be from my class. We'll start first with Molly Shambro. Hello, Molly. How are you? So, Molly, you are a student that was in my class last year, but you got a little extra bonus. You get to spend a semester with me. Tell us a little bit about what you got.
Well, I'm currently an intern for the AAF Tucson internship, and so I'll be working with Ackerley Advertising for the following semester.
Great, and you're working with my assistant, Gabby, and we've got you doing a million things trying to figure out what it's like to be in the advertising business and use your marketing degree.
Mm-hmm.
How are you enjoying it so far?
Oh, it's great. I love it. Learning so much. I'm doing things that I did not think I'd be doing, for example, being on a radio show, so that's pretty cool.
Yeah, that's great. Well, that's a good learning experience for you, and we call it applied learning, and so part of the good experience that we have at the U of A is to give students that opportunity. Sitting next to you there is someone that name might be familiar to some Tucsonans. His name is Stephen Tyler Loop, who is also a student of mine, now currently taking a class with me. So, what class are you taking at the University of Arizona that you met Dr. Ackerley?
I'm taking Marketing 452.
Right, we call that the Integrated Marketing Communications class. And a matter of fact, our friend Matt Neely's wife, Mrs. VSQ, sometimes comes down and speaks to our students. So we'll get her. She's going to come in next semester, but she's been speaking to our classes for years. So Tyler, you're a senior in marketing at the Eller College, and you're getting a degree in marketing. Save the extracurricular activity for now. What would you do with a marketing degree sometime in the future?
You know, I really haven't gotten that far yet.
Well, that's okay.
I've had a lot of interest. So my dad works for DirecTV, and
right.
There we go. He works with the commercial side, marketing, and working with all the B2B relationships and
right.
vendor relationships. And I've thought that's pretty interesting because I've
right.
gone with him to some events and spoken to vendors. I just love the human interaction side of it. So
we talk a lot about in class about the whole focus of marketing, especially integrated marketing communication, is about building and maintaining and leading relationships.
Yeah.
And that's certainly what your dad sounds like he does is for a living with DirecTV and moving in that direction. You know, it's okay for both of you. We asked that question of Molly off air, what she wanted to be when she graduated. So Molly, what do you want to be when you finish this this process?
Well, when I was asked earlier, I said I had no idea because I'm still thinking about it. But I do want to do something within the advertising agency industry. So having this internship helps a lot.
That's great. Well, you know, that's part of what going to university is all about, is exploring options and seeing the things that you might want to do or the things that you could possibly do. And we all have hopes and dreams. We often tell students at the U of A that, you know, your degree, you may not be actually working in the area that you're studying for, because life has lots of twists and turns, and when you go down that road. So I do have to ask you, who's your favorite teacher at the University of Arizona? But you don't need to answer that out loud. But certainly, I do want to hear you say somebody other than me. So Tyler, most people might recognize your name because you are a important person who plays on the University of Arizona football team. So tell us a little bit about who you are and your journey from Texas to Arizona and what you do for the team.
Yeah, so I'm going in my fifth year. I grew up in a small town called Lucas, Texas, and grew up playing soccer whole life. And there's actually a guy I went to high school with, his name's Blake Pfaff, who played safety for the team, I think 2017 through 2019. And I was really connected with him in high school. His dad kicked here during the Dick Tomey era.
Oh.
And I got connected with him and started taking kicking lessons and just kind of developed from there. Was really fortunate, got the opportunity to come out here and play football on a on a scholarship, so took it and came out here, and I've just loved Tucson ever since.
So you're the place kicker. You kick the extra points and the field goals, and you're pretty good at it, aren't you?
I'd like to think so. I've definitely had a career that I'm proud of here. Yeah. It's been a big blessing and something I'm super fortunate to be a part of.
I was looking at some of your highlight reels from your high school days and some of the long kicks that you had, and then, of course, your accuracy at the collegiate level has been pretty well noted, that you're one of the most accurate kickers in the game today, and maybe at one point of all time in NC2A, your accuracy. Now, what mental drills do you have to go through in order to get yourself ready to kick a 52-yard field goal or an extra point when the pressure is on and you're the guy? What kind of mental preparation do you have to go through?
Really just comes down to practice again. Like, you know, we spend multiple hours a day out at practice kicking and getting reps with my snapper and my holder, and really just refining that craft. You know, I've done the leg swing tens of thousands of times. I've kicked a ball tens of thousands of times, and I've done been coached and spent time practicing it. But when it comes down to game time, there just has to be a mode where you can kind of turn off what you're thinking about through your process of like, all the little details you may have been working on through the week. You just got to be able to put those away and trust your preparation and your muscle memory and going out there and knowing that the guys around you have your back, you're going to have their back. And when you have that relationship, you can go out and just be completely calm and just kind of shut off and play the game and have fun with it.
Do you hear the crowd, especially in stadiums where they're, you know, the other team is screaming like crazy people trying to throw you off? Do you hear the crowd, or are you so focused on making an accurate kick that kind of, you just kind of screen that out?
Yeah. So when you're running out, it's for sure, it's super loud. Like it's pretty nerve wracking. But it always goes back to that process of like the muscle memory. Like once you get in that mode, it just kind of becomes white noise. Mm-hmm. And it usually does that anyway, cause there's so many people screaming, but it just kind of turns into white noise and crowd noise goes away and you can just focus on your kick.
And the two other key components that, helpers that you have, the snapper is really important because they've mm-hmm. got to get that ball back, and then your holder is extremely important because they got to get that ball up so you can get it through the goalpost. So those two guys are really important to your practice and to getting it all down, right?
Yeah, no, they're huge.
Who are the two guys that have been doing that? Who's been snapping for you and who's been holding?
Yeah, so I've been super fortunate. My first 4 years of college, I had the same two guys, Kyle Austendorp mm. and Seth McKellar. Right. Seth was actually a management major at in Eller, and Kyle was an aerospace engineer. But, you know, we got on the football field, and we had a great relationship, and that was something that I was super fortunate to have. And it's been, you know, something I'm thankful for, is having those guys around me to be successful. And, you know, moving forward, we're going to have guys that are going to help me be successful even more, and I'm going to have their back. And
right.
Yeah.
And Kyle is a punter as well, right?
Yeah.
And so he's a pretty amazing punter in his own right.
Right.
And, does he have the same snapper for punts as well?
Yeah.
So the three of you are like a team, or have been a team for the last 4 years, and boy, can Kyle punt the ball a long way. You can probably mm-hmm. punt the ball a long way too, but it's amazing that whole skill set that is really important to get that. But getting it, you know, Kyle's more of a defensive player in the sense he's trying to pin the other team back in the backfield, but mm-hmm. on the other side of the 50. But you're important because you score points. And how are you on the points leaderboard? Are you doing pretty good?
I think I'm at like 250 right now.
That's pretty amazing.
I heard someone say that. I think I need 111 more points to be the all-time leading scorer.
Great. Well, we're going to do that this next year.
Yeah.
Well, when we come back, we're going to talk a little bit about the future of University of Arizona football. We're with Tyler Loop and Molly Shambro. Tyler's the kicker for the U of A football team. You're listening to Jump in Tucson on KVOI, 1030 AM, The Voice. We'll be back in just a minute. Welcome back to Jump in Tucson. This is Monday, and we're talking about the great things that are going on at the University of Arizona. I have two University of Arizona students with us this segment. We have Molly Shambro, who is a student intern with the American Advertising Federation Tucson, and she gets to spend the next semester with Dr. Ed Ackerley and Bill Ackerley at Ackerley Advertising. Welcome back, Molly.
Thank you.
And we're also with Tyler Loop, the place kicker and extra point kicker for the University of Arizona football team. Welcome back, Tyler.
Thank you very much.
Well, you know, you mentioned the name Dick Tomey, who was a great coach at the University of Arizona. I had the good fortune of knowing Coach Tomey fairly well. He used to come into my office sometimes and sit there, and we would just talk about football and the how things will be going in the future. When he was retired, he was a great guy, and what a great tribute to the University of Arizona to have Coach Tomey with us. And one of his guys, graduate assistant and a former coach at the San Jose State University, Brent Brennan, has been named as the new U of A football coach. So obviously, when you heard that news, it was probably exciting for you to have a Coach Tomey disciple come in. Tell us a little bit about how the team is responding to Coach Brennan and how the future looks for the football team.
Yeah, it's been super cool. Coach Brennan's a great guy. I remember when he came in the first day, I showed up for a 6 a.m. workout, and he was standing outside of the facility because his code couldn't get him in the in the facility yet, and I let him in, and he just kind of started touring around, and me and my friend went up to BDK, Bear Down Kitchen, to start eating breakfast, and we were sitting there, and all of a sudden we hear this do-do-do-do on the window outside, and he had gotten off on the wrong elevator. he came inside and sat down, had breakfast with us, and I was just really impressed. You know, one thing that was stressed pretty heavily here in Tucson is under Dick Tomey was the team.
Mm-hmm.
And when you look at the group of guys that we have, the leaders on the team, the captains of the team, you know, the culture guys, right, who really drive, hey, this is what Arizona football is about. One thing that we talk about a lot is loving each other and always having your teammates back, right, holding each other accountable, mm-hmm. encouraging guys, lifting them up. And, you know, that's something that just sitting down talking to Coach Brennan, he was all about. He cares about the family that we've built, the camaraderie and the brotherhood that we've made here. Because really when it comes down to it, the players are the program. Mm-hmm. And that's something that Dick Tomey has stressed a lot. That's something that Coach Brennan has stressed a lot. And it's something that when in our first team meeting and he sat down with us or stood in front of us and was talking about, hey, you guys are the ones that matter, right? The players are the ones that matter, right? If there was a magic scheme, everyone would be coaching it, right? But right. What makes it work is the players. And so that's been something that's really cool and encouraging, I think, to all of us is when he cares about the players and mm-hmm. he wants to see it succeed, not only on the field, but as men, as young men developing and going out into the world. He cares a lot more about that and seeing to succeed in that area of life.
Well, you had a pretty unique event a couple Saturdays ago when during a basketball game, the team kind of flooded out onto the floor. Everybody was looking up at the screens, kind of looking up, and all of a sudden they look down and there's this huge throng of young men on the court. Tell us a little bit about that. Who thought that up and how that all came about?
I don't know who thought it up. I know that it was cool because, man, with coaching changes, that brings a lot of uncertainty as to, you know, now at the transfer portal, it's almost like free agency. Like you can just leave, you know, you can leave and go to the other schools without much penalty. And obviously NIL has a huge effect right. on that. And so, there was a lot of uncertainty of like, I mean, like I want to stay, but I don't know who else is like,
right.
what's going on. But it was really cool to see everyone just kind of rally around as a team. And I think it was special to be able to go out and showcase that at halftime and be like, hey, Tucson, like we're a team. You know, this is the brotherhood we've built, the family that we have, and this matters. And, man, we want to be here. And so it was a special deal being able to go out there and, you know, be with my brothers and be out there.
It'll be interesting. You know, he's brought in a couple of coaches, but he's also retaining some coaches from the staff, Coach Aquina and some others. And that's a good sign too, that you'll have some continuity with some of these coaches that you've built this camaraderie with.
Yeah, no, it's super nice. Having familiar faces around is definitely like a great thing. You know, the people that are sticking around, the people are keeping around care about the players and the family we have and that brotherhood that I keep bringing up. Man, they're all for it and they're pushing it, and it's been super excited.
Well, we look for a great thing is coming up with the U of A football team in the next season. For Tyler, you know, we talked to you earlier about what's he going to do once you know, football is over, because you know, maybe you could kick for 10 or 20 more years, but at some point you'll have to give up the sport and move on to something else. What are the prospects for you moving from the collegiate level perhaps to the pro level? Do you think your prospects are pretty good, and would you like to do that?
I think my prospects are pretty good. You know, I've been super fortunate to have a successful career here. It's been super special to me, and that's something that I feel like I've put myself in a position to go to the next level. And you know, if that door is open to me, if that's an opportunity for me, I'm gonna pursue it as long as I can. But you know, when I feel that door closing, I'll you know, move on.
Well, obviously the pinnacle would be to play for an NFL team, but there's also the merger of the new spring league, and there's also Canadian football, European football, all of those other possibilities that are available to you. But with the talent that you have and the perseverance that you have, moving on to the next level will certainly be something meaningful in your life. So let's just talk a little bit about the culture at the University of Arizona, both Molly and Tyler. So why did you, I know why you picked Arizona, because of, you know, you had the opportunity to kick, but why did you pick the University of Arizona of the couple hundred schools that you could pick across the, what makes the University of Arizona special? What makes it, you know, that wonder concept so meaningful in your life, Molly?
Well, it's a lot better than ASU. That was my initial thought.
Yeah, I like that.
ASU is way too close to home. I live in Phoenix.
Right.
And so when I toured U of A, I actually toured it twice. And during that time, I was like, this just feels right. It's a very, like, college-feel community. Everything's tight-knit. Like, it felt like home to me for the next 4 years.
It's almost kind of like what Tyler was talking about, the team and how the camaraderie and the family relationship that the players have with each other. The university feels like that, too, especially in the Eller College.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of a family atmosphere, and you feel comfortable there.
Right.
Yeah. And what about you, Tyler? Why, other than the fact that obviously you got a scholarship and you're getting to kick the ball, but why Arizona and why not some of the other colleges that recruited you?
I love the Santa Catalina Mountains.
Yes.
That So being from Texas, it's completely flat. But I remember getting off the plane and touring around, and the first thing that I did is, the family that picked me up, some of our friends, we went and toured the mountains and drove through there. And then as we got closer to campus, it just kind of felt like home. Like it was, like Molly was saying, like very tight-knit, family-driven community. Feels like college, you know, kind of a home away from home. Like the community that I've been able to find here has been incredible.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the University of Arizona does a good job fostering that, like, close-knit, bear-down spirit we talk about a lot.
Yeah, you know, my good friend and campaign manager, Sixto Molina, often brings up the point that, you know, Tucson has lots of differences. We have different people on different political parties, people of different religions, different cultures, different viewpoints. But we all come together on Saturday night at the University of Arizona to watch U of A football, and the person sitting next to you may have a diverse opinion from you, but we're all rooting for the same thing. It's one of the unique things that we have in Arizona, and including, you know, women's basketball and men's basketball and all the other, I think there's 21 sports certainly coming together, but U of A football certainly has a unique setting, and I've been a lifelong fan. I've been going to football games my whole entire life, and I plan on keeping going. So, well, Tyler, we wish you the best of luck in your future here at the University of Arizona. We want you to kick them straight and kick them through every time, and see if you can be 100% perfect in 2025. But we don't want to give you 2024. We don't want to give you that challenge. But you've just been an amazing boost for the University of Arizona football team. We appreciate what you're doing, and we appreciate Coach Brennan coming on staff, and it'll be interesting to see what he does. And so Molly, thank you as well. These are the good things that are going on. Students are one of the really good things that happens at the University of Arizona, the good people that are taking classes there and applying their advertising. So these are the stories that we'll be telling over the next few Mondays, talking about wonder at the University of Arizona. Thank you both for coming today, and I'll see you in the classroom, right?
Yeah.
Okay, this is Ed Ackerley. You're listening to Jump in Tucson. We've got Ted Maxwell tomorrow. Grant Kruger on Wednesday. We've got Tom Moulton coming up Thursday, and I'll be back again next Friday. Thanks for listening, and this is KVOI 1030 AM The Voice. We'll see you on Friday.